One of the big questions headed into this election, amidst a historic wave of mobilization among Democratic voting groups, is how many of them will actually get to vote. Last week, we covered the governor's race in Georgia, where the Democrat Stacey Abrams has led efforts to add hundreds of thousands of new voters to the rolls. But it turns out her opponent, current Secretary of State Brian Kemp, has also been purging voters, most of them black, by the tens of thousands. According to our next guest, this is a tactic whose use across the country escalated dramatically after the Supreme Court weakened the Voting Rights Act. Jonathan Brader is counsel for the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, where he studies and litigates vote suppression efforts. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So could you start by just walking us through the mechanics of a voter roll purge?
Voter purges are basically the process by which election officials remove the names of individuals from voter rolls. That's, of course, necessary and appropriate when it's done properly, for example, when people die or when they move. But the problem occurs when the data is wrong or it's done in secret. There are a number of sources that traditionally election officials have relied on to identify people who may have become ineligible. One is the National Change of Address database, which the United States Postal Service maintains. There are also a number of state health and vital records databases, along with the Social Security Master Death Index that states can use to identify people who have died. So there is some variance within and among states in terms of what lists they use. But one thing we found recently is that some states are relying on unreliable databases, such as the Interstate Crosscheck Program, that wrongly confuse two different people or that wrongly identify an eligible person as having moved or for some other reason having become ineligible to vote.
The Interstate Crosscheck Program, this is the product of Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach, kind of a fire-breathing Trump supporter. What in your mind is wrong with that list? What are the false positives?
Well, basically, it attempts to match a lot of states' voter registration records against each other, with the idea being that they can identify people who might be registered in multiple states. The concept of that is fine, but the problem occurs because the data, the way it's matched, is not precise enough to rule out confusing two different people for the same individual. You can get an initial match on CrossCheck based only on first name, last name, and date of birth being the same. And in a database that contains more than 100 million records, you're going to have a lot of people that have the exact same first name, last name, and date of birth. Another problem is that we found that sometimes the data is just plain wrong, particularly the date data. So it will identify someone as having being registered more recently in Arkansas when they're actually registered more recently in Virginia. That obviously defeats the entire purpose if you're trying to cancel the old registration. So those problems have basically led to people being misidentified either as having moved when they haven't or as being confused for an entirely different person.
So that sounds sloppy, but not necessarily partisan. Is there evidence of any more sinister intent?
Well, the problem occurs when it's used in a way that's not careful. I mean, it's not necessarily that the data is inherently partisan or that the data is inherently discriminatory, but the way that it's collected does, in fact, disproportionately affect certain communities. So because of name patterns, because of the commonalities of certain shared names and certain demographic groups, it's the case that minorities, non-white voters, are more likely to have commonly shared names. So when you have a database that confuses two different people based on name, they end up getting identified more often than white voters. And so the data is inherently more likely to target certain communities. And then the problem occurs when voters aren't given sufficient notice or states aren't careful enough with how they use the data. They then end up removing voters, some of them in error, and those voters are more likely to be minority voters.
So this would be specifically and particularly true for African Americans because the slave name system has led to lots and lots of people sharing the same last name.
Yes, that's a big factor. A lot of African Americans have more commonly shared last names. It's also the case that a lot of the most common last names are Spanish surnames, so it affects Latino voters as well.
That is kind of the most innocuous form of purging, which is just checking to see that you're not having the same person registered in more than one place or that they haven't moved. But you also chronicle the effect of purging people on the basis of their criminal history.
The entire idea of disenfranchising people because of a past criminal conviction is rooted in a history of discrimination. So there are a variety of state laws on this, but in many states, even after you've been released from prison, if you've been convicted of a felony, you still can't vote. Florida is the starkest example, where there's, you know, more than a million people in Florida who are out of prison but can't vote because of a past criminal conviction. And these laws historically were passed as part of a set of, you know, Jim Crow laws and Black Code laws that were designed to disenfranchise African Americans. And even now, because of the disparities in the criminal justice system, African Americans are much more likely to be affected by criminal disenfranchisement laws. It's also the case that in most states, while you're incarcerated, you're not eligible to vote. So states do have processes to identify people who have been convicted of crime so that they can be removed from the voter rolls. And those in Florida and elsewhere have been done in error for some of the same reasons as happens with cross-check, in that you have two different people being confused for the same person, and that has disproportionately affected African Americans in Florida. There's also a recent episode in Arkansas in which they used faulty data and ended up confusing different people and also removing people who actually hadn't had a felony conviction but were in the court system for some other reason, such as a misdemeanor or even a divorce. So you end up having people who weren't even convicted of felonies who are getting removed in error.
So you have like two compounding issues there, right? African Americans disproportionately prosecuted and convicted. And then if you have a sloppy matching system and African Americans tend to share names, you're going to have more false positives who are Black in a place like Florida as well.
That's right. And that's exactly what's happened in 2000 and 2004, when large numbers of voters were purged wrongly on the basis of felony conviction, often because one person was confused with another. And another compounding problem with the purging of people on the basis of felony conviction is that oftentimes people don't even get a notice prior to their removal, as opposed to when you move, it's required by the National Voter Registration Act that before someone's removed because there's some secondhand information that suggests they may have moved, they have to get a notice and there has to be a waiting period before they can be removed. But that's not the case with felony convictions. And some people who get purged wrongly only find out when they go to vote and see that their name is not on the voter rolls.
So you've laid out the mechanism for voter roll purges really well. I guess the first question is, like, what's the scale? How big a problem is it? How many false positives are out there, do we think?
It's hard to put one number on what the error rate is in purges, but we do know that overall states are purging more. We found that there were 4 million more people purged between 2014 and 2016 compared to the relevant period prior to the presidential election in 2008. And we also saw that an increase in purging correlated with an increase in provisional ballots being cast. And that's relevant because provisional ballots are given to people who show up to vote and are missing from the rolls, which suggests that as certain jurisdictions are purging the voter rolls more aggressively, they're also removing higher numbers of eligible people.
As opposed to people who are actually dead or moved out of state.
Right. I mean, you're amplifying the problem. Not just because you're purging more people overall, but also when you do large scale purges, when you try to do these big matching projects where you compare the voter rolls with another list of thousands and thousands of people, that increases the tendency for there to be a lack of care and a lack of notice, which can create more errors. In some cases, it can be really high. For example, in the cross-check program was used in Virginia in 2013, they found in one county that 17% of the people identified were identified in error. So obviously, if you have an error rate that high, coupled with thousands of people getting purged, you're taking off a lot of eligible people.
What evidence is there for political motivation rather than bureaucratic ineptitude behind the purges?
I think that sometimes election officials, when they're doing voter purges, when they publicize them, they talk about it as a need to combat voter fraud, which is a politicized topic. We have seen President Trump and other like-minded individuals raising this specter that there is all this illegal voting occurring, which is not actually the case, to sort of score political points. I think in other cases, it may not necessarily be politically motivated. The election officials may think that they're just trying to keep the voter rolls up to date, but the lack of attention to the communities that are being affected by this disproportionately suggests that election officials are not always mindful of the way it could affect communities of interest that might be different from those areas that typically support them.
I want to read you a quote from the current Secretary of State in Georgia, Brian Kemp, in a closed-door meeting with Republicans in reference to a voter registration drive that was, at the time, this is 2014, being run by his current opponent in the governor's race. Quote, "The Democrats are working hard. There have been these stories about them, you know, registering all these minority voters that are out there and others that are sitting on the sidelines. If they can do that, they can win these elections in November." That sounds like pretty straightforward evidence for politically motivated voter purges. Does that stuff go anywhere in court?
It can. I mean, we have seen, for example, in lawsuits that were brought against voter ID laws, which similarly can have a disproportionate effect on minority voters, statements that were made by some of the supporters of the laws that indicated that they were, you know, either motivated by or ignoring the clear racial disproportionate effects of those laws that happened in North Carolina and Texas and other places. So having those kinds of statements on record can be relevant. It depends, of course, on whether the claim is that these types of laws are politically or racially motivated. Oftentimes with voter purges, the basis of the claim is the National Voter Registration Act, which does have a purpose of preventing discrimination, but also has some pretty clear rules about how you can purge and how you can't. So it may not even be necessary to establish some kind of political or racial motive if you can show that the purge violates federal law, which we did in Indiana when we brought a lawsuit challenging a purge based on cross-check there and got a preliminary injunction blocking that earlier this year.
Many of the states doing mass voter purges now, prior to the Supreme Court's weakening of the Voting Rights Act, would have had to get prior clearance from the Department of Justice before they could change their purging procedures. How much has that changed their level of activity?
Well, we found that the jurisdictions that used to be subject to Section 5, the preclearance provision of the Voting Rights Act, before the Supreme Court eviscerated that in 2013. Those jurisdictions, mostly in the South, but also other places, including parts of New York City, they purged their voter rolls much more aggressively in the four-year period between 2012 and 2016 than they had in the relevant period. We found that had 2 million fewer voters would have been purged over those 4 years if those jurisdictions had purged at the same rate as the rest of the country. So it does seem that without having that requirement that the federal government has to pre-approve changes to the voting laws in place, those jurisdictions did purge a lot more people, and we weren't able to identify any other explanation. We tried to control for other factors that might have explained why the purge rate went up.
But the ruling really just addressed the issue of preclearance. It didn't change any of the standards for what is or is not a legal voter purge.
Yeah, well, the way that preclearance worked is basically when a state did what was called a covered change, a change that was covered by the Voting Rights Act to their voting laws, and that did include purges, things that would change the way they remove voters, they had to get pre-approval from the Department of Justice or from a federal court, and they actually had to demonstrate that it did not have a racially discriminatory effect before it could go into effect. And that is vital because it stops discrimination from occurring before it can go into effect. Whereas now, although there are other parts of the Voting Rights Act in place, we now have to usually wait for a law to go into effect and then demonstrate the discrimination after it's already been in place. One example of that is Texas. They had passed a strict voter ID law that had been on hold because of preclearance. They put it in place after preclearance was struck down, and then we eventually brought a lawsuit in and were able to get the law struck down, but it had already been in effect for the 2013, 2014, and 2015 elections before it was invalidated. So having to do so after the fact doesn't get you as far as being able to prevent it from going into effect in the first place.
What about enforcement by the Justice Department? How's that changed from the Obama administration to the Trump administration?
We've seen a pretty dramatic change so far. Under the Obama administration, the Department of Justice, both with regard to voter purges and other voting laws, tended to be zealously enforcing the protections against discrimination. But we've seen under the Trump administration, not only have they switched sides in litigation, including the Ohio Supreme Court case involving purges, where they switched from supporting the civil rights groups that were challenging the law to supporting Ohio, but we also have seen them actually sending letters to states asking a whole litany of questions about their purge practices, which could be a precursor to them taking some kind of enforcement action where they try to use the National Voter Registration Act, which is generally meant to protect voters, to actually try to force states to purge the voter rolls more aggressively.
All right. Jonathan Brader, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Jonathan Brader is counsel for the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, where he studies and litigates over vote suppression efforts. The most recent report he has co-authored is on the practice of voter roll purging, tracks a dramatic escalation in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision eliminating the pre-clearance provisions of the Voting Rights Act.